I would actually just say, do you know what where I've noticed that you do hear clipped British accents is on train announcements specific to Southern Railway. It's like, this is the Southern service to Brighton.
Yes.
She says Brighton. With
calling name. At Clapham Junction.
Haywards Heath.
East Croydon.
Hassocks.
And London Victoria.
Burgess Hill.
Yeah.
And then Southeast, Southwest train service is kind of, Waterloo. Aspen. And then, massive detour on trains now. The Paddington one, the one that goes Great Western Railway that runs west through Paddington to Reading and Exeter and
a train
Bristol,
you'll frequent.
A train you'll frequent to go home, is more like, welcome aboard the Great Western Railway. And they'll be like, calling it Reading. Like, they're so excited.
Didcot
Parkway, Bristol, Temple Meads. I'm like, no one has ever been that excited to go to Reading. Okay. And I'm glad you are.
They're like, we bought a ticket for £700. Come.
So I was in Bulgaria over the weekend for a stag do. Stag do in Borovets, which is I won't be rude about Borovets, but it's not like skiing in other parts of Europe. It's a little bit
that
Soviet.
That comment makes you sound
it makes you sound like an asshole, but it is very different. Way cheaper, which I can't talk about. The customer service experience in Bulgaria is quite unique, whether it's like hotel reception, waiter, airport security. And so I'm on my way home in Sofia Airport. And I'm going through security, and it's like very austere, very Soviet passport control, immigration, bag checking, and I get to security. And I pride myself on being quite fast when I go through security. Like, I fly a lot, kind of like George Clooney up in the air vibes, but nowhere near as good looking. And this, it's kind of like a very lo-fi security thing. It's a guy with trays, like dig belt, this, blah, blah, blah. And I get there, I've got my laptop out already, jacket off, belt. I'm ready to put my stuff in a tray, and I put myself in the tray, and he looks at me and he goes, "You have gun?" And I thought, I'm chewing gum. And I thought he meant gum. And I went, "Oh, yes, sorry." And I took the gum out of my mouth. He's like, no, "You have gun?" And I was like, "Gun." And he's like, "You have gun?" And I was like, "No." And then he half smiled and then just went, and just like nodded his head, like, off you go. That.
He was just playing fun with you. He was just bored.
That's his sense of humor. Like, "You have gun?"
I'm just
like,
to see you squirm.
No, just to see me squirm. But who wouldn't squirm?
You know what? I did leave my AK in my bag.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Threw it in the bin outside the airport. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to episode 116 of Pulp Kitchen. If you're a new listener, welcome. Thanks for joining us. I hope you've had a great week. If you're a regular listener, great to have you back. We are here to talk about two films this week. Well,
sort of.
1.5 films. We talk about Bob Marley, the Bob Marley One Love. By the way, when the BBFC title came up, it's not what Bob Marley colon One Life. No, One Life. One Love.
Yeah.
No.
One Love.
One Love. It's Bob Marley One Love.
Bob Marley One Love.
Bob Marley One Love.
We don't know Bob Marley, if it was One Marley One
it
was, Love.
Yeah, it could have been Bob Marley One Love.
Love.
It's, that's what I've seen, and I'll be reviewing that.
Or Bob Marley One
Love Nil. it's a tennis match. Love.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we'll also be talking about Madam Web, which, full disclosure, neither of us have seen. But what we wanted to, we'll talk about this when we get to the review.
We have something for you,
but
don't
we
worry.
Wanted to, in case you have seen it as a film reviewing show, we have got it for you. So we have got an external contribution coming in for that segment.
Outsourced, really.
We've outsourced the review to someone to a friend of the show.
But it's gonna be great.
So stay tuned for that. Shall we crack on with some films, James?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
So guys, one of the biggest films that's out this week is Madam Web, part of the Marvel / Sony verse, the Morbius verse, the soon to be Kraven the Hunter verse. It's starring Sydney Sweeney, it's starring
Dakota Johnson.
And look, neither of us have seen it.
No.
And that's for a couple of reasons. One is that we've heard it's absolutely shockingly bad.
Yeah, 16% of Rotten Tomatoes at the moment.
And the other reason is that, mostly because of that, me and George just genuinely weren't interested in seeing it.
Yeah.
But we're interested in covering it.
Yes.
And we found that when we reviewed films of this certain type that are not very good, it becomes very easy to kind of just sit here and roast it.
Yes.
But we do want to cover it for you guys. We do want to, as a film podcast, have something to say so you guys can have your own impression of Madam Web. One of our film friends who you've seen on our account from the Film Bites is Henry Calvert. He's at henry.calvert on Instagram. He's very funny. Do go and follow him on social media if you don't already. He does all things nerd culture, comic books, Dune, everything. He just absolutely loves it, and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
We've decided, because he recently saw Madam Web, he got a chance to see it early, we're going to call him up on the show and ask him his opinion of Madam Web, and his review will serve as the Pop Kitchen review.
Yes.
And likewise, we'd obviously still love to hear your thoughts if you write them in.
So this way, you guys get a review from someone who is invested in these films and wanted to see it, and you get his views without us needing to fake a review for something that weren't interested in the first place.
I was also away. George, we just didn't want to force it.
It was very forced.
This shouldn't always be true, but I think I already know what I would say on it. Yeah. So it's just a bad ROI on our time. But nonetheless, guys, we are going to cover it. We're going to do it. So Henry, George, if you'd like to place the call to Henry now.
So he's driving. Henry.
Hello, is this Pulp Kitchen by any chance?
You are live with Pulp Kitchen indeed,
Henry. Hi, Henry, how are you?
And you're driving on the road at the moment. So you're in transit, right?
I am currently on my way back from the big city, back to North Yorkshire, because the UK train system is not very good at the minute. So I've been forced to drive down for a few events this week.
Well, we thought it'd be really good as a way to distract your journey, to give you something to think about, for us to talk about Madam Web. Tell it to us straight. You're a guy who really likes these, you know, you're invested in this world. What did you think of Madam Web?
I think it could quite possibly be one of the worst films I've ever seen, and by far the worst superhero film I have ever seen.
Wow.
And I've seen Van Forstick.
No, it beats Van Forstick.
I would say, you know, I was racking my brain about this earlier, and I think Van Forstick kind of hurts me more personally because I care about the Fantastic Four a lot more than I do Madame Web, as a character. But fundamentally, I think Madame Web is just much more of a flawed film. Like, nothing in it works. You can critique essentially every aspect of it. It's terrible. It is utterly terrible.
Is it one of those movies that, like, when the end of humanity happens and, like, you know, the aliens come and the planet's on fire and the fall of civilization happens, people will think, well, it's not all bad because Madam Web won't survive. Is it, like, that bad?
I would say so. It's so bad, you gain no ironic enjoyment from it.
That's cutting.
That's bad.
Henry, can I ask where this sits in relation to Morbius? It's sort of a cousin film of the same studio.
I think it's worse than Morbius. I enjoyed it a lot less than Morbius. Yeah. I think Morbius is at like a 2 out of 10. This is easily a 1 out of 10. This is not good. I'd rather watch Morbius again.
So
Morbius doesn't like break my brain whenever I try and think about it.
And does this make you really excited for Kraven the Hunter then?
Kraven the Hunter and Venom 3 are going to be cinematic masterpieces in comparison to this film. I do not know how they can be any worse than Madam Web. And if they are, I commend them, because a whole new low has been set in the film industry.
Henry, your passion and your candor, as ever, is much appreciated. You've seen this film, so we didn't have to.
We really appreciate it.
Oh, any time, guys. Any time you don't want to watch a really crappy superhero,
we will hold you to that.
I will tell you it straight that it is bad.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, go back and watch some of the marketing for this film. Go back and watch some of the press junkets for Madam Web, where Dakota Johnson's like, well, people are going to want to see it twice, and it's such a feminist piece, and it's so empowering, and all this nonsense that I don't even think she's seen the film. I'll be completely honest with you.
Can I ask, is there any sort of scenario where people, maybe as part of a drinking game, get together over a few beers? Does it have any merit if you were to sit down and laugh at it in any capacity, or is there just nothing, even ironically, to be enjoyed by it?
I think the first 10 minutes, my mate laughed a lot in the first 10 minutes, but then it's like really... It's like eating a McDonald's, okay? Like, a McDonald's... In fact, no, that's an injustice to McDonald's. It's like eating a 3 a.m. pizza place, okay? 3 a.m. pizza is really bad. Wherever you get it, it's really bad. But for those first 10 minutes, you know, it's all right. You're really drunk and you're scrambling away quite happily because, it, you know, it does its job. It's after those first 10 minutes, there is no ironic enjoyment because it just keeps going. Like, the bad dialogue keeps going. The bad acting keeps going. The poor CGI. The dubbing, for some reason, is off. Like, the say something on screen and you'll hear a different sentence. The man is clearly a talented ventriloquist.
Oh, man. Amazing.
Well, Henry, thank you so much. Yeah.
Anytime, guys.
Really appreciate it.
Let's do this again soon.
We'll do this again soon. Hopefully see you soon as well in person.
Absolutely. Would love to. Have a great week, guys.
All right. Bye. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Well, guys, there you go. That was... thank you very much, Henry. As always, you can follow Henry at henry.calvert on Instagram and on TikTok. He's very, very funny.
Very funny. Very forthright and open, but affectionate of generally most things geek and nerdy.
It's almost like because the story of the last
in
year...
In a non-toxic way.
Is that the MCU is dwindling. They've had some failures, multiple in a row. And when you're spending $200 million a film, that costs a lot of money. But it's almost like the Sonyverse is like, hold my beer.
Yeah. I'll show you what a real car crash looks like.
The Sonyverse, outside of the Venom films, has not worked.
What I find quite funny about this is that all of the Sonyverse films have been criticized for looking like they came out in 2003.
Yeah.
And bizarrely, that sort of trickled down to the writer's room where they've decided to set Madame Web in 2003, yeah. As if that would some sort of counteract it.
It looks like it could have be on the blockbuster shelf next to Ben Affleck's Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the bargain.
And I actually don't mind Ben Affleck's Daredevil. Like, compared to this, Watch, I assume it's not very good. But yeah.
Next to Elektra.
Elektra. This is the Daredevil spin-off, yes.
Well, anyway, that was Madame Web. If you have seen it...
It's not done very well at the box office. I think it's made $15 million in its opening weekend, which is bad.
I also saw that it has like one of the highest number of edits in a movie ever.
Like, in terms of like cuts per...
Cuts and scenes around and it. Changes and shots and things. Because it looks like it was basically put through what can only be described as a film mincer. I used to work on a meat counter and I used to put things through a mincer. So I can imagine you have the original film, which just gets ground down into this sort of mince meat version of a film. And then they go, well, there you go.
I've also seen like there's a couple of social media clips about how they've hired very beautiful actresses and likes of Sydney Sweeney and Dakota Johnson, and how they've actually been doing thirst trap marketing in like the Russian junkets and like other places to like convince young men to see it. Like, there's videos of Dakota Johnson being like, and I don't want to blame her because I'm sure she's being asked to do what the studio's telling her, but she's like, you're going to want to see it more than once because it's everything you dreamed it could be. Oh, wow. And it's literally like thirst trapping young men to go and see it.
What makes me sad is the villain in this film is played by an actor called Tahar Rahim, who is really, really talented, and I love him in things. He was in Napoleon briefly, but he was in like the Mauritanian and the Prophet, A Prophet it's called, from like 2009. He's such a good actor. And then I see him in this, I'm like, oh, Tahar Rahim, come on.
Adam Scott, who I really like, he's a massive nerd and he really enjoys the stuff and he's quite protective over these things. So I'm sure he's also gutted that it just didn't work out.
Anyway, Madam.
That's Madam Web. But guys, if you had your thoughts, we would genuinely love to hear them. If anyone did enjoy it or if it offended you in different ways, you can send your thoughts to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com and we will, of course, read them out on the show.
Okay, let's do Bob Marley, One Love. I don't know why I keep tripping over that. I think it's because over here I've written One Life, but One Life is the movie with Anthony Hopkins that we reviewed.
So. I think you should insist on saying it with Bob Marley, One Love.
Bob Marley, One.
Just put gaps everywhere. Bob.
Do you remember the Marley, football announcer? One Love. The Chelsea One, Arsenal.
Oh, Hill. Yeah.
West Ham.
Stockport Two, Manchester City. So love that. One. Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so Bob Marley, One Love. James, Bob Marley, how familiar are you with him?
Mildly familiar. Obviously, some of the most iconic and worldwide famous songs of all time.
Yes.
Have listened to Bob Marley casually, maybe in my youth. Yes. But, and I'd appreciate him whenever he's put on.
Exactly. I think I know a bit of Bob Marley. I haven't sat and listened to Bob Marley in years, but. Yeah. I think it's safe to say we all know the words to many of his songs.
Probably
iconic.
Probably some of his songs would be considered in the top 50 most recognizable songs of all time, comfortably.
So Bob Marley, One Love is a film starring Kingsley Benadire playing Bob Marley and Lashana Lynch playing his wife. Basically, Bob Marley takes place between I think it's 1976, and Jamaica is in a period of incredible socio-political conflict. Mm. There is, it's almost like on the brink of a civil war, two warring political parties, warring gangs, violence all around. And in the heat of this context, Bob Marley, who we meet is already an established artist, already a huge cultural figure, it's straight in, is setting up a One Love concert to kind of bring together this disunity and unify the country in the name of peace. And the first sort of act of the film, in a way, plays very much like the third act of a different version of this film. It could easily have been the third act, where the concert is it's all setting up, it's about to happen, and then there's an act of violence against Bob Marley at his home, which completely disrupts plans. There's an attempt to do the concert, but we soon find Bob Marley having to basically become an exile, escape from Jamaica, and go to the UK and live in London while his wife goes to Delaware and live there. In London, obviously culturally alienated in a time of, you know, this is 70s London, this is punk rock, this is, you know, strong, austere racism everywhere. Mm. And in this context, Bob Marley has the weight on him of being not only a successful musician, but being a cultural figure who is having, who has the expectation of trying to unify greater political events. So he has this kind of weight of being a figurehead. And in that context, he starts to work on a new album, and he's saying this whole time, it has to be different. It has to be different, it has to reflect other things. And it's going on to make what would become the Exodus album. Manager, played by James Norton, is in there. And you have, that's the kind of basic setup. It cuts back and forth to earlier chapters in Bob Marley's life. So here's the thing. We've had a lot of musical biopics in the past 5 years. Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, Elvis, Whitney Houston one.
Very hot right now.
Very hot right now. And hit the Back to Black soon to come as well, the Amy Winehouse one.
I said Rocket Man.
I said Rocket Man, yeah. The thing is about musical biopics is that often you take a figure who would have begun as countercultural and then broke through and brought the mainstream to them. You often have a radical figure, maybe not with Elton John, maybe not with Elvis, and probably not with Queen, but someone like Amy Winehouse is not wasn't mainstream at first.
Yeah.
And Bob Marley wasn't mainstream at first. You know, these are kind of people who have great big ideas and principles and kind of radical figures. When you then see that it's a big blockbuster, mainstream, broad brush, textbook musical biopic is being made about that person, I'm always a bit like, is that just going to just shave all the edges off of that interesting person? Mm. Where's the nitty gritty in this? So going to see Bob Marley, which I went to see with a friend of mine who's a bit more clued up on Bob Marley, a bit more invested, I was kind of reticent. I have to say that on the whole, it basically is what I expected it to be.
Okay.
It is textbook. It is going through the motions. Not so much as something like Bohemian Rhapsody, which acts very much like Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. This Bob Marley, One Love, it is a big, broad, textbook, mainstream, studio, musical biopic. But I'd be lying if I didn't say it wasn't elevated by a couple of things. First of all, Kingsley Benadire completely loses himself in Bob Marley, which I really, really like. I always believed this person was a real character as well that worked on screen, not just a representation of someone real off screen. Lashana Lynch continues to be a really magnetic presence. Every time she's on screen, I think she's electric, and they work really well as a dynamic. There are, you know, sick moments of imagery. There's this repeated imagery of a burning crop and Bob Marley as a child running through this burning crop, being chased by a shadowy figure on horseback. That kind of is a motif that comes back and back. I thought that was quite interesting. But that aside, there are one thing they do fall in the trap of doing is sanctifying Bob Marley to the point that he almost talks in like Facebook quotes, you know, the kind of like, and I think, I'm not saying that he wasn't a wise person. I'm not saying he didn't have those things, but sometimes it held him up on such a pedestal it was a bit one dimensional. I wanted a bit more drama there. And like, there's a bit where they suddenly go, and you know, there's more to him actually as well. Maybe he wasn't such a good guy. And they kind of do that for one scene. And I go, well, you could have explored that a bit more. Like, one thing that, say what you will about Rocky Man, but what I like about that is that it's very upfront about being how, it's very upfront about how difficult Elton John was as a person.
Yeah.
And the ramifications on that, the people around him. This kind of only wants to deal with that for one sort of scene and bring it back. Even though I like the fact that it's about something more serious than, against the sort of like pantomime-ness of Elvis or the kind of, maybe you could say silliness of Rocket Man. This is about something more serious about Jamaica, about cultural identity, about Rastafarianism. And I like the fact that it's trying to engage with that. But what it does lack is actually bizarrely a killer musical moment. Now, I'm quite very, very, very lukewarm on Bohemian Rhapsody, and I think it's very nuts and bolts. Same. But what it does have is it does deliver that great 10-minute Live Aid sequence at the end, which absolutely it makes almost the film worthwhile and kind of sends you out after the film on a high. And I found really bizarre. There's not a lot of musical performance in this. There, you know, there's a little bit at the beginning, and then we see him in the studio. And I've actually seen people, famous characters, trying to work on an album more compelling than that. If anyone wants to see the Brian Wilson Beach Boys biopic with Paul Dano, that's really good at depicting the construction of an iconic album. Less so here. And then it builds to a point where you think there's going to be a great 10-minute sequence of music, and then it just stops and it ends.
Wow.
And I felt quite bereft of a moment there. I'm like, it's a musical biopic. We all want to hear the songs. We all want to see
him perform. Especially if it's been withheld, right?
Exactly. Which is a real shame. I think, yeah. So interesting in the sense that good performances, trying to take on a weightier issue, but still very broad brush, not very deep, not very memorable. I will say one thing, actually. I really did admire, they really, I believe quite authentically, from what I've read around it, I wouldn't know. I've never been to Jamaica, but the accents are incredibly specific and I believe accurate. Mm. And I like the fact that it made no concessions to its audience. There were a couple of times where I lost some of the dialogue because the accent was so thick. And even though that could be annoying, I actually admired the fact that they were committed so much to making an accent that authentic and that believable. Yeah. They were making no concessions to its audience. So there you go. I think if you really like Bob Marley, well, the friend I saw with who really liked him thought he did him a disservice, thought it was shallow, but I don't know. It's fine.
If we're to be very cynical, the music biopic is an attempt to go, this person's music is worldwide famous and popular, therefore there is a market for a film about their life. And obviously, like, some are better than others. But like Bohemian Rhapsody, I found a bit, I didn't really get to the heart of it. No. Again, but that sequence is amazing. And there's a second enjoyment of that final sequence where you compare it. There's someone on YouTube has lined it up to the original and you really can get blown away by it. But I'm not that interested to see it based on that review. I think Kingsley Benadir is good into what I've seen him in and Lashana Lynch as well.
It also does that thing which I find quite jarring, which is like Kingsley Benadir is a performer. And then when he sings as Bob Marley, it's Bob Marley's voice. Which I actually find quite jarring because they don't sound, I don't believe when he sings that sounds like Kingsley Benadir, the character. So like Rami Malek doesn't actually sing a lot of the Freddie Mercury stuff in Bohemian Rhapsody, but what they did, they mixed Rami Malek's voice with a little bit of Freddie Mercury's voice and an impersonator that they found on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
So what you get is not Freddie Mercury's voice, but you also get something that sounds like it could be from the person you are seeing. Whereas when I was watching Kingsley Benadir, as soon as he started singing, my head's going, that's the guy from Spotify. Bob Marley from Spotify. Yeah. That's not the real Bob Marley.
Whereas in Rocket Man, I don't think Taron Egerton sounded like Elton John at all, but
it works
because he's a good performer and he really goes for it. I thought that's fine. He doesn't sound exactly like him, but the performance regardless works.
And also that,
and he was singing it in very different contexts to what you would have heard on Spotify.
But that also works for me when they are actually singing it because it's that character you've seen on screen.
Yes,
using their voice in the way your brain does. There's not a disconnect. Whereas if you just suddenly it's like turning the track off. I actually found out that even though I saw the trailer for the Amy Winehouse Back to Black film beforehand, I thought that was Amy Winehouse's voice over the trailer, but apparently it is actually Melissa Abreu. Marissa Abreu.
Amy Winehouse, very distinctive voice.
Yeah, and apparently she is actually singing in it. So anyway, that's one musical biopic down for the year. It's all right if you have seen Bob Marley, One Love.
That equal spacing there.
Yeah,
Bob Marley, One Love.
Let us know at hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
So I had a three-hour flight to Borovets, to Soviet, which is a great duration to watch a film because you've got 15 minutes or so either side of seatbelts and drinks and faff. Mm. And in the middle, you've got clean. You've got 2.5 hours of solid film watching time. And I decided to put on Society of the Snow. Very heavily recommended. Not a plain movie, George.
I mean,
I knew the plot, but obviously I start watching this and I'm like, oh dear.
Yeah.
I know what's going to happen to this plane. And if you've seen it, please go check out George's review first of all. He reviewed it a few weeks ago and gave it great praise. And a lot of people have written in have also praised it. So I did want to get to it. And the scene of the crash,
it's just
not a spoiler, it's quite terrifying. When I say I was clenching as I was watching it, looking at like the knees and the seats and the sounds. Yeah. I had a window seat and I was looking out the window and you know you just see the wing flapping. And I'm just like, oh my God. Anyway, context of what I saw it apart, I really did think it's very good. The concept of Society of the Snow, I think, is a really easy sell. Plane crashes, people have to survive in the middle of the Andes with no food and no chance of being rescued. Like, that's a very easy to sell. But what I think is way harder to do is to tell a very sort of intimate and personal tale and really get people to feel something. And that's exactly what this film does. I was just constantly surprised by how good the writing was. Mm. And there's a brilliant use of voiceover that sort of sandwiches all of these different scenes together. And the more and more it goes on, it feels like poetry washing over you as you watch it. There are particular scenes of mine. I thought the photography scene really got to me, and the moments where they exchange notes and them justifying the things that they have to do to survive. And it was incredibly powerful, and it ends on a really, really moving note.
Yeah.
And I just thought, brilliant. Entertaining in that sort of Netflix elevator pitch way, but also really delivers a fantastic heartbeat with great performances. And visuals brilliant. Every time they showed everything from above, you realize how far away they are. Yeah. Every time they try and sort of climb up something to get context for where they are, you just go, oh my God, I cannot believe the situation that they're in.
Yeah.
But and then sort of like trying to tackle what these people are doing to survive, I think, is a really difficult thing to do, to tell that story and honor the people who had to do what they had to do. Mm. But it totally worked, and you feel every single decision that they have to make.
Yeah,
how
much of the story did you know without revealing to those?
I didn't know what they had to do to survive at all. So that was totally.
And you didn't know how it would end.
Didn't know at all. But just really, really moving, and everything about the film that was honoring film and cinema and capturing and photography as telling a story has a wonderful meta feel to it as you're watching the story being told really well. And they want to try and get people to understand what happened, and you're watching a film that does actually communicate to you why it was effective in telling you what happened. So there's a nice sort of heartwarming feel to that.
It has got quite a... I'm really glad you liked it, because when I think about it, it's like got a balance of really great tender emotional moments and then real kind of visceral, horror, uncomfortable scenes of terror. Mm. It's not just... And you'll see when you watch something, it's not just the plane crash at the beginning. There are severe challenges that they have to face. One particular sequence in the middle, you're like... So uncomfortable.
But it's
an amazing story.
Yeah. So thank you for sort of recommending it to us. And if you haven't seen it yet, please definitely go and check it out. It is long, but it's definitely a great watch.
I thought though it used its time. When I was watching, I thought, oh well, we've got a lot to cover here because they are stuck. And for them, you're watching characters who for every minute is valuable.
Yes.
So it's not a film that feels baggy because every moment is desperate.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Anyway, Society of the Snow.
Anyway, let's move on to some emails. As always, guys, if you wanted to send your emails into the show, you can do by emailing into hello@pulpkitchenpodcast.com. Just like
Andrew did. Andrew writes in and says, Dear George and James, in brackets, alphabetical order.
Oh, very good.
I've been a regular listener to the show for half a year now. Keep up the good work.
Nice.
Actually, I'm a university professor.
And
if you are a university professor, are you also curmudgeonly? Like in American fiction and dream scenario and the whole
thing. Please elaborate. Are you too smart for your own good?
Every university professor on film is always unhappy.
Yeah, my university professors were usually in good spirits.
Oh yeah, I had a couple of characters in mine.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, real. Yeah.
Oh, I had one. I had an American literature seminar guy who was very jaded and cynical about everything. It was it was the same time the Great Gatsby film had come out, and I remember he spent half a seminar just ripping into it. And I was like, well, I thought it was quite an artistic flair.
It almost sounds like Paul Giamatti and the Holdovers. Anyway, Andrew says, I'm a university professor, and I used one of your clips. In brackets, the one where you impersonate reporters from various news outlets. Oh, yes.
Nice.
In class, because I thought you nailed the aesthetics. Oh, wow. I thought I would just share a quick thought. I watched Naiad last week and I really enjoyed it. I reviewed Naiad, everyone, on a bonus a couple of weeks ago. Go check it out. But I thought it offered a useful comparison point to Maestro. Mm. As part of your critique of Maestro, you said it didn't do enough to show us what Bernstein's achievements were. I absolutely agree. By contrast, Naiad is incredibly effective and shows us exactly why it's so difficult to swim from Cuba to Florida. Yeah. Yeah, it does actually, yeah. It teaches us about the craft of swimming. How I wish Bradley Cooper had done the same for conducting and composition. I actually think that's such a good point.
Whiplash for jazz drumming as well. Making it distinct from other drumming and the demands of being able to play in like the top New York musical school at that.
Even like Top Gun Maverick about like the G-force. Totally. Like, oh yeah, that would be really hard to do that.
And it was basically A New Hope, but the whole like graphics, the GFX they used in Top Gun Maverick, like, I understand exactly what they have to do, and they're training for it in a false environment that will be replicated for the real thing.
Not just building some sort of mystical about this person was a genius, so he was good at composing. But anyway. Yeah. But I wonder, Andrew says, do you think there's something inherently more challenging about depicting a relatively cerebral art form like composing music than a physical feat like swimming? Cheers, Andrew. Well, I guess like visually it's easier to show a physical challenge, boxing, swimming, sports movie.
Yeah.
But I think it is possible and very, very entertaining when someone can tackle a cerebral form like guitar.
You can also with, I believe, and again, I'm not a film director, with editing and like using like how you manipulate the strings and the notes on the page and how that lines up. You could get really creative and show with a gesture how that affects like 60 musicians in front of you.
I also would say, look at what Nolan did with Oppenheimer. Mm. That's a physicist, right?
Yes.
A theoretical physicist.
Talk about ideas.
You know, on paper, that's the driest thing for most people that there is, right? Dry subject.
Ideas that no one watching can understand.
But I watch Oppenheimer and I understand. I might not understand it intellectually, but I understand it sort of emotionally and aesthetically, how his brain was working in the context of how his mind. I actually really like that first half, that first bit of Oppenheimer.
Spinning in the atoms.
And when he's in Oxford and his mind is sort of unfocused. And like, I understand now kind of the challenges, even though I can't explain it, I kind of feel it, which works. But
and Oppenheimer never explains to you how they make a nuclear bomb, probably for legal reasons. Probably because it's probably really hard to do. There's never a moment where, like, what we did is we got the hydrogen and we just cracked it with a good old thing. Like, you don't know how they spin it.
It's still the plutonium.
But like, you know, when they like lower the little silver bar in and you hear the crackling. Yeah. Even though I don't know what they're doing, I'm like, oh, careful. I feel a lot of pressure now that we have a university professor listening.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Did we pass? Did we get a first?
That's to be very good.
Me, could do better. Thank you, Andrew.
This next one is from Warren, who writes in relating to when you rewatch Band of Brothers. You can check out George, who recently rewatched it, and there's a video up on our YouTube and on the podcast. He says, thank you for your service. The Band of Brothers series is one of my favorite rewatchable shows, along with Friday Night Lights. Yes, weird combination, I know. I completely love how personable the characters and stories become, and the to-camera pieces are incredibly powerful. And yes, if you can make it through the baseball game without shedding a tear or 20, then you're a monster. Yeah. Karehi from Warren in Sydney.
Thank you, Warren.
Thank you very much.
This next email from Robin about Anatomy of a Fall. Robin writes in and says, hope you're both well. Robin writes in about asking us to do a spoiler cast for Anatomy of a Fall. And thank you for writing in, Robin. And I appreciate it. It's the kind of thing that we both love Anatomy of a Fall, but it has been probably too long now since we've seen it to properly do a spoiler podcast. I think both of us would happily watch that film again in the future, and I'm absolutely keen to show it to Anna. And once I have done that, I'll happily do a little spoiler chat for us if you'd like to, because it's clearly something you want to talk about. And you really pick up on your email here, Robin, about like, the dynamics between people. But even in you writing about it, I'm like, God, I don't quite remember that dynamic.
It's a dense film. Like, so straight away, as soon as they start forensically going through the house, there are details there.
So I possibly in the future, but not for the time being. Sorry.
Next up, Jonathan writes into the show and says, hi, gents. Hope you're well. Writing what is now my third email to you and now seems like it is an annual tradition of some sort. After hearing your American Fiction review, I felt like I had to write in to propose a different perspective. We reviewed that a couple of weeks ago. George, safe to say we weren't super impressed with American
underwhelmed.
Fiction.
Underwhelmed.
Elements we liked, not... I went in with high expectations.
It's more of a family drama than it is a satire, and I think we were underwhelmed by the family drama.
Yeah. As someone who, Jonathan goes on to say, as someone who really enjoyed the film, I think the most important scene for framing the movie is the analogy of different Johnny Walker brands and the belief that for you to provide something niche, you sometimes have to give something for the masses first. Yeah, I think that's
good. Yeah, I like that scene. Yeah.
As a black person, you are overwhelmed with the amount of films / books / shows that constantly review, assess, and comment on the black experience. Moonlight, The Kitchen, Top Boy, I can go on. Sometimes you just want a standard story that happens... that just happens to have black people in it. That's why the bait and switch approach of the film works for me. The film is having a meta convo with itself, with the director saying that for him to get a black family drama made, he has to sneak it in a film about what it is to be black and the use of black trauma in media. It is not only making fun of the publishing and film industries, but to us as well as an audience as we have created this issue, a joke I enjoyed personally. I do agree that it didn't fully land the plane, but by then the film had already had me as it had balanced the tightrope of satire and earnest family drama well. I also have to say that I love Sterling K. Brown's performance. Someone who is trying to find himself, but the bitterness that he has for his family still holds him back. It just shows enough softness to see that he is breaking inside without going over the top or needing some massive monologue that Oscar films tend to have. As always, love the show and wish you the best. Friend of the show, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah, fair point. I mean, I don't think it's bait and switch because I don't think Cord Jefferson is setting up the satire as a distraction. I think he genuinely is interested in that, but he wants to give more time to the family drama, which is fine, and I get that. And I with Sterling K. Brown, I agree with everything you said. I just, in a way, I think he was I would have liked more time with him. Give me more.
The idea of that the film being itself a satire of itself.
Yeah.
I think I totally agree with you, and I think that's there. That almost has to be sort of maybe more clearly telegraphed for me to really go 100% that's in there. But yeah, he also goes on to say, P.S. I'd love it if you would do a Kermit Awards style-like episode where you would select winners for the main Oscar awards with people / films who are not nominated, e.g. Greta Lee for Best Actress. You could even do polls on the Insta for people to vote and nominate candidates. I like the idea of doing a poll.
I have been thinking about that.
Top Kitchen People's Choice.
But for those, you can't. The criteria is you can't be nominated for Oscar or a BAFTA.
Mm.
So it kind of opens the field the way. Well, we know who'd be winning Best Actor, wouldn't we? Andrew Scott, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
This next email is from Jake about Argyle. Again, Argyle, I reviewed 2 weeks ago, of which we know the name there was The Pattern.
Argyle.
Which we talked about in the bonus. Argyle. Hi, James and George. Second time, I think, writing to the show. Nearly caught up on your back catalogue now. Back to business, though. I went to see Argyle this week in a double trip to the cinema. I didn't enjoy it. Everyone else in the scream seemed to laugh and enjoyed a lot more than I did. I just didn't like the action sequences. They didn't excite me. The constant flickering between Sam Rockwell and Henry Cavill annoyed the crap out of me. Yeah, that is really annoying. Like, they basically, like, she'll be looking at Sam Rockwell, then she'll blink and it'll be like Henry Cavill. And I'm like, snore. It annoyed the crap out of me. It just took me out of it. I also thought the last... where Ellie felt rushed and unnatural. You're telling me. I eye rolled at that point.
That's a spoiler. George isn't having
a I'm not just humming for the fun though. I'm covering spoilers. At least with the first Kingsman, the action sequences got me going and I felt more invested with the characters. Massively, massively disappointed with Argyle. The other movie I saw in my double bill was Illumination's Migration. Oh, yeah, the duck movie. Yeah. I see that and I'm like, the duck movie?
Oh, look,
movie.
There's a duck movie.
Wow. That was so much better. It made me laugh so many times. Would recommend it if you haven't seen it already. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your hard work on the show. Sirens on my end. Jake. Well, on Migration, it's not a film we've covered. No. Probably not a film we're going to cover. We're not the target audience. We don't have an interest to go in there. Probably wouldn't be fair on the film.
Sirens on our end.
Yeah, it wouldn't be fair on the film if we would review it. However, nice to hear that it worked for you.
Just going to skip over to Charmaine because we've done Band of Brothers quite a lot.
Yeah.
Next up is Charmaine, who says, Hi, Pop Kitchen Podcast. Like that there. I'm a new listener of your podcast.
Like,
we're a corporation. We're an entity. Oh, yeah. We're not people. I'm a new listener of your podcast, and I've been in just like Dear Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah, Dear Coca-Cola. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Dear Black Rock.
Dear Sunny D.
I'm a new listener. Corporate.
Yeah, yeah.
Niche. Old school. I'm a new listener of your podcast and I've been enjoying all the videos. I would like to recommend a new show called Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It is a rendition of the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie 2005 movie. This new series is excellent. The cast is great.
Sorry.
The cast is great. The writing is great. It feels so real and natural. And the style and pacing of the show is amazing. I think more people should be talking about this show. It might just be one of the best TV shows to come out in 2024 so far. Please give it a watch if you had not tried it. And if you have, I would love to hear your thoughts of it on the podcast. Best regards, new listener from Singapore. Hello.
Fantastic.
From Singapore.
Hello, Singapore. Thank you, Charmaine. I have heard really good things
as
well.
I've heard good things. It was a thing that I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge was originally attached to, but then left. But it's apparently
turned out. Oh, that would have been cool, the two of them, because they've got great chemistry.
I think it was like she was doing that sort of writer-actor input that she does.
And she went to do Indiana Jones.
Yeah, yeah, sure to go do that. Yeah, I've also heard great things. I'd love to try. Is it now all out? I think Talia fancied it as well, so we might give it a go when we've got time.
Hi, James and George. Zoe here from Australia.
Hello. Nice.
I really like the far afield emails coming in from wherever you're.
Spin the globe and get an email.
If it's Liverpool or LA or Australia or
Singapore
or what's a British town beginning with A?
Anglesey
is in Wales, yes. I believe, isn't it? Yeah. Hi, James and George. Zoe here from Australia. I'm a new listener to the podcast, making my way through the back catalogue as we speak. I love your unique format, subject matter, interesting discussion, and comedic banter. Yeah. Thank you very much. Our listeners. Not to mention your sophisticated British accents are so easy and soothing to listen to.
Why, thank you.
You're listening to BBC Radio 4.
Zoe, the pleasure is all ours.
I would actually just say, do you know where I've noticed that you do hear clipped British accents is on train announcements, specific to Southern Railway. It's like, this is the Southern service to Brighton.
Yes.
She says Brighton. With a
calling at Clapham Junction.
Heywood Heath.
East Croydon.
Hassocks.
And London Victoria.
Burgess Hill.
Yeah.
And then Southwest train service is kind of, Waterloo. Aston, so yeah. And then, massive detour on trains now. The Paddington one, the one that goes Great Western Railway that runs west through Paddington to Reading and Exeter and Bristol.
A train
I frequent to go home, is more like, welcome aboard the Great Western Railway. And they'll be like, calling it Reading. Like, they're so excited.
Didcot
Parkway, Bristol, Temple Meads. I'm like, no one has ever been that excited to go to Reading, okay? Okay? But I'm glad you are.
They're like, we bought a ticket for £700. Come.
Zoe says, I'm curious if you listen to other podcasts in your spare time, if you have any recommendations. Love your work and cannot get enough.
I do listen to podcasts in my spare time. What I would recommend, because there's plenty I listen to which are very popular that a lot of you also probably listen to, especially in the UK. I'm going to give a shout out to a podcast called Idiot with Laura Clary. She's really funny, especially the ones she does with Mann and Matthews. They basically spend the entire podcast in some sort of like skitting character and they just freestyle comedy for like an hour at a time, and I'll listen to it while I'm watching the dishes, and they're just hilariously funny. There's also this one where like Mann and Matthews was pregnant and she just was half skitting but also just burst into tears about how hard it is to be pregnant, and I thought that was really good. If you love PlayStation, listen to Sacred Symbols. It's a 4-hour plus long weekly podcast all about PlayStation, and I really like that. And then also I've been enjoying The Rest Is Football with Gary Lineker, Mika Richards and Alan Shearer.
I don't listen to that many podcasts because we are busy doing this one. I'll occasionally listen to a couple of other film ones just to see what their takes are on specific films. But I would recommend the Adam Buxton podcast for anyone who wants to have a kind of... If anyone's familiar with Mark Maron and the kind of interviews he does, it's like the British version of that. But I find his conversations, Adam Buxton's, very enlightening and revealing and casual. He's a very good interviewer. He's interviewed a huge range of people, as big as people as Paul McCartney. His Richard E. Grant interview is very good because Richard E. Grant is so open. They have a really great conversation about very niche things, but it's not off-putting. It's very calm, open, and I really recommend.
I also find I occasionally listen to Newlyweds now with Jamie Lang and Sophia Boo. Like, he is a bit of a cliche, but I do find he is quite self-aware and he's very good at making fun of himself, and a lot of his stuff, his dynamic with his wife is really, really funny. If you just want a casual laugh, I check that out. But just keep listening to Pop Kitchen.
Of course, top of the list, Pop Kitchen.
This last one is from friend of the show, Khadija.
Oh, yes.
Khadija, how are you?
Welcome.
Hi, George and James. I hope you guys are doing well. I got to see Argyle with a friend last week and I have thoughts. Mm. I agree with George's sentiment that it was an incredibly silly, incoherent movie, but nonetheless, I had fun. I feel a certain application for Vaughn, as he's one of the only filmmakers I know of that makes fun, cartoonish, spy/espionage films. I am a Kingsman, The Secret Service truther, not so much The Golden Circle or 2021, The King's Man. Sorry, Harris Dickinson. So I particularly enjoyed moments in Argyle that reminded me of it, especially the colourful fight/dance number near the end. That sounds like something I wouldn't be into. My only complaint...
Oh, of course, yeah.
My only complaint is that after the initial plot twist where things just kept piling on and there was no room to digest the twist from before. I feel as though they were trying to jam as many cliches in as possible and it just didn't work. Also, I have this very delusional theory that Roxy Morton will make a return in Kingsman 3 based on what happened with Ariette...
Roxy Morton, is that from Chicago?
Yeah, sorry, I've just lost you there with the Kingsman thing. So here's the question for you. Is there a filmmaker whose movies you'll watch regardless of what they put out because they once made a movie you're obsessed with? TTYL, Khadija, P.S. The J isn't silent. Lol.
TTYL. TTYL. Thank.
Should we find out? Oh, sorry, we're not cool.
Take care. TikTok, you lot. Tata, you lot.
Oh, okay. Talk to you later.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, how cool.
Any filmmakers that have made a film that I'll continue to see their films even though they might not be any good anymore.
Mm. That is a good question. I think I...
Ridley Scott.
It's regardless Ridley of what Scott. They put out. Yeah, you do Ridley always Scott. Line up for Ridley
I will,
Scott.
I will go and see a Ridley Scott film even though his output, I think, in my opinion, has
That's
been
a good
poor,
shout,
poor
actually.
Recently.
Yeah. Fincher, I'd always be interested in Fincher. I mean, he's like a top 10 filmmaker.
That's not a hard one. It's someone who's like, okay. All right, it's a bit...
Regardless of what they put out. You can say that with Nolan. You can have mixed reviews on Nolan, but I'd always be excited to see what he's doing.
This is a bit of a stretch, but I would probably be open to always seeing an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I've had really in-depth conversations with friends of mine, big film friends,
yeah.
who passionately defend M. Night Shyamalan, not for the quality of his work, but they are like, he is a successful auteur director still operating. And, you know, it's not just about Jordan Peele. It's not just about Quentin Tarantino. M. Night Shyamalan has found his part in the market. He's found his type of content, and he's still able to make M. Night Shyamalan movies for over 20 years, right? He's only done one franchise thing, which was The Last Airbender, right?
Yeah,
so
didn't really work.
They, like, defend his right to do that. And in a way, like, even though I think... I mean, I thought Knock at the Cabin was trash. I would always be curious to see it, I think, on principle for that reason, because he's out there still doing his thing.
You hope that if he manages to pull it off, it would be a really great feat because he's tried something really ambitious and it would work. It's like that quote in Zoolander where Hansel's like, you know, I just really appreciate what Sting's doing. I don't listen to his music, but I just like that he's out there.
Anyway.
Well, there you go, guys. Those are the emails for today. We still have plenty to get through. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. Please do keep sending them in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
And like I said last week, apologies if it takes a while for us to get to your email. We do have a lot coming in, we're trying as much as we can to get read them. Occasionally, we can't read a couple of them out just because of production time. We're very sorry, but we love you listening. And we do read them anyway when they come in.
Yes.
We managed to read them out loud. Thank you very much. James, shall we go and play some games?
Let's do it.
James. Welcome to the games round of Pulp Kitchen. As ever, it's my time to give you some games. And I thought, we're going to kick it up a notch this
year.
Let's
do it, baby.
Okay? We're going to kick it up. Yeah. You'll be familiar with Cast Us Countdown.
Yes.
It's a game. It's a time-honored Pulp Kitchen tradition.
We came up with it ourselves.
We've played it many, many times. And
a fan favorite.
What a fun time we've had. But I was thinking, it's episode 116 now. It's time to beat you through the paces a bit. I'm going to lean over onto your treadmill and just push the numbers up right now and see you run a bit faster.
Yeah.
I'm going to name for you... We're going to do Cast Us Countdown, rapid fire.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to name for you three actors, and you have to tell me what film they are in immediately.
Together, right, okay.
I mean, I might give you like 5 seconds, but it's like, I'm going to name you three actors, you have to tell me the movie, and then if not, next one, okay?
And are these the leading actors?
It's a mixture. The lead actor will always be in the thing.
Unless
the film is very famous, but there will be each three should be a mixture of small actor or small role, medium role,
large role.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I like it. Let's do it.
It's going to be quick. Let's go. So I'm just thinking. James, guess the movie that stars these three actors. 3, 2, 1. Dua Lipa, Michael Cera, and Margot Robbie.
Barbie.
Yes. Matt Damon, Jessica Chastain, and Matthew McConaughey.
Interstellar.
Yes. John Cena, Bill Hader, and Amy Schumer.
Trainwreck.
Yes. Rami Malek, Florence Pugh, and Robert Downey Jr.
Florence Pugh and Robert Downey Jr. is
Oppenheimer. Zoe Saldana, Stanley Tucci, and Tom Hanks.
Stanley Tucci and Tom Hanks and Zoe Saldana.
The Terminal.
Oh yeah.
Pedro Pascal, Colman Domingo, and Dave Franco.
No.
If Beale Street Could Talk.
Oh, okay. Well done.
Toby Jones, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and Harrison Ford.
Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Yep. Samantha Morton, Colin Farrell, and Tom Cruise.
Colin Farrell and Tom Cruise? Mm-hmm.
Big director.
Colin Farrell and Tom...
That is Minority Report.
Oh, God. Colin Farrell is in it.
Yeah, okay, go on. Matt Dillon, Michael Douglas, and Owen Wilson.
Yumi and Dupree.
Yes, well remembered. And lastly, Justin Long, Ben Stiller, and Vince Vaughn.
Dodgeball, yes, an underdog absolutely. Story. Yeah.
That was round one. I like one. That.
That's
well
good.
Done.
Yeah. God, just when you think the games can't get more intense.
I like the fact that of all of them, Oppenheimer was the one that
I know.
Stored
it's just, you.
You
know what? Like, Rami Malek is in that for 12 seconds.
Yeah. But he's an Oscar winner.
And he had like Florence Pugh. And I actually wasn't thinking about Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. Fuck Oppenheimer for the cast. Like, he did just way too many big stars in that movie. But well, it's great.
Okay. Did you enjoy that?
I did enjoy that.
Okay, we're going to go for round two now, okay? Well, you're going to have to guess again. You're going to have to guess the movie mm-hmm. from the three actors. Mm-hmm. Guess the movie from these three actors okay. in 3, 2, 1. Olivia Colman, Rachel Weisz, Emma Stone.
The Favourite.
Correct. Shailene Woodley, Penelope Cruz, Adam Driver.
It's Ferrari.
Correct. Jason Bateman, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck.
Jason Bateman, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck. That is
recent.
Jason Bateman.
Not water. Not solid. Air.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Olivia Wilde, Harrison Ford, and Daniel Craig.
Oh, is it Cowboys and Aliens?
Yes, yeah. It is. Well done. Yeah. Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, and Meryl Streep. It's complicated.
Oh, okay.
Sally Hawkins, Rowan Atkinson, and Timothy Chalamet.
Sally Hawkins, Rowan Atkinson. Oh, Paddington, no.
Wonka.
Wonka, shit.
You Wonka. Samuel L. Jackson, Brie Larson, and Tom Hiddleston.
Brie Larson, Tom Hiddleston.
Wrong, Kong Skull Island.
Oh.
Although, like, technically, you could say the Avengers, actually,
could
you?
Say Avengers or Marvels or something.
Fair enough, that's unfair.
Did Loki cameo in Marvels?
Fair enough. Orlando Bloom, Sean Bean, and Brad Pitt.
Troy.
Correct. Yeah. Adam Brody, Amanda Seyfried, and Megan Fox.
Jennifer's Body.
Correct. Ian McKellen, James Marsden, and Hugh Jackman.
X-Men.
That's
something.
Correct. The first one will do. Tom Hardy, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Inception.
Well done, James. Stumbling on a couple of those. There. Yeah. Like, well, the more recent ones are the ones that catch you out.
It can be, yeah.
Like Wonka.
Wonka
I just set in the cement of your brain.
Sally Hawkins was like, something to do with. Rowan Atkinson could have been anything.
A sweet, sickly childhood about a British character.
That's a good game. I enjoyed that.
Thank
well,
you very much.
Well devised, well crafted.
It's like playing the hits of all of the games we played, but a trunk. It's like, not. What's the opposite of a microdose? It's even stronger. Neat. It's a neat yes. version of Caster's Countdown.
It kind of feels like my brain is like a world map, and you are. With your eyes closed, with a dart, just throwing it and asking yes. me with two hands to go to three different places yes. at the same time. And I'm sort of kind of piecing it together. I enjoyed that. It's a good little mental exercise.
Those were the games this week, guys. And that was episode 160.
If by the time we get to like 500 episodes, you and I aren't the most revised and like well-practiced yes. people of who the fuck was in each film, I'll be really disappointed. If someone's like, what's the face of what? Like, yes, they were in, it was Colman Domingo in that 2015 film.
They're going to come to us when, starring. You know, like Blade Runner 2049, when there's been the blackout and everything has been, they've lost all yeah. online stuff. It's all down to paper. They're going to come to us and be like, you need to fill in the cast list for every movie
John
that ever
Google
happened.
Will knock on the door and be like, this is going to sound really bad.
I'm Gary Oogle.
We lost it. We lost everything. We need your help.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go, guys. That was a fast, quick Caster's Countdown. James?
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Pop Kitchen. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. Don't forget, we post new episodes of this show every single Wednesday.
Please continue to follow us on Instagram and TikTok. As we say every week now, we're posting more stuff,
more
new
content.
Stuff, things that content that isn't on the show. Our film bites, check those out. Mm-hmm. They're great fun. Also, just helps support us. Share clips to your story. Like, comment, send it to a friend. It really, really helps us. And leave reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever you're listening. It's really great.
Professors, teachers, people who have the ability to display our media in front of a yes. mass influential audience. Please, lift our stuff. Put it out
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Tell them it's a essential for their degree, their exams, that they listen.
And if I may sound materialistic, if you happen to be some sort of marketing director sitting on a big fat budget and you're looking for a good podcast to advertise your brand, hey! Come on over!
Well,
let's have a chat. But until then, guys, have a wonderful week and we'll see you next week for episode 117 of Pop Kitchen.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.